Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and thanks for tuning in once again to Enterprise Radio here on EPN. If you're not already connected with us yet on our various social media outlets, we invite you to do so by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all at ePodcast Network. Today, we're visiting with Dr. William Putsis, who is a professor of marketing, economics, and business strategy at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and a faculty fellow for executive programs at Yale University. He is also president and CEO of Chestnut Hills Associates, a strategy consulting firm, and founder of the software company Cadeo Economics. His new book is The Carrot and the Stick, Leveraging Strategic Control for Growth. And Dr. Putsis, thanks for joining us here today on EPN.
Eric, thank you so much for having me.
And the pleasure is certainly ours. Thanks for your time. So tell us, what inspired you to write this book, The Carrot and the Stick?
It's funny, I had an earlier book. It's called Compete Smarter, Not Harder. And I would often go out and give talks in conferences to companies around that book. And the two points that everyone wanted me to know about when I talked about the process developed in that book was what I call the carrot and the stick, which are what I refer to as vertical alignment and points of strategic control, complicated terms, or essentially a carrot and a stick. So the short answer to the question is every time I gave a talk, people wanted to hear more about these two subjects, and I had nowhere to send them since no one's written about it before, and so I thought I'd write a book around it.
So out of curiosity, I'm sure there's no surprise that I'm asking this question, but what exactly is the carrot and the stick?
I'll do them hopefully relatively quickly through examples. So I'll start with the stick, which is probably the most important of the two. The stick is the point of something that you own that in the value chain, something that you as an organization, a patent, a piece of intellectual property, a resource, no one else can access. It gives you the ability to earn extra margin. I'll give you quick examples. There was a company called the Minnetonka Corporation a number of years ago that had a product. It was liquid soap. Back when I grew up, at least, we used bar soap, not liquid soap. And the company had a product called Crème de la Soap on tap. It didn't exactly roll off your tongue. But it was the first real big version of liquid soap in the United States, and they wanted to go national with it. The problem that they'd have as a small company from Minnesota is if they went national, they'd have essentially a difficult time of getting on the shelf and a huge expense, only an opportunity for the Colgate-Palmolive, Johnson & Johnson's, and the Procter & Gamble's. Essentially what they thought, if they were even successful, the big companies would come in and push them off the shelves. But they knew if they had a 12-month window to keep the big players out, that they could actually, even with the big players in, with a 12-month advantage and enough shelf space and brand recognition, even with the big players in, they could be successful. But couldn't patent soap. There was no real effective way to keep the big players out. And so essentially what they did is they decided to go around to buy up the world supply of pumps. They literally sourced the world supply of pumps. So if someone wanted to enter the market, they would then have to go in and build their own factory, which took about a year. And the result of that was that about a year and a half later, the big players came in. This company, the Minnetonka Corporation, ended up with about 35% of the market, even with the big players in. And they sold the company out to Colgate-Palmolive a couple of years later for $1.7 billion. That's kind of the way you become a billionaire, at least in one example. And the reason why I tell that story to begin is that the stick was the pumps. They were not in the pump business. They were in the soap business. But since there weren't that many production facilities for pumps throughout the world, if they could at least over a period of time control the ability to buy all of the pumps, other companies couldn't enter. And it's a technique used by Amazon, by Google, all the large tech companies that have been successful over the last 10 to 15 years, and very few people realize that they often have the foresight to get points of strategic control on their own markets, which in turn gives them the ability to dominate into future markets. And there are many examples like that that I go through in the book, some more recent, some as old as the 1800s. But that's essentially what we mean by the stick. I call it a point of strategic control, something that you can own that may preclude others from entering so that you can get an advantage in the marketplace. And it's I would argue, any entrepreneur trying to fight back against any of the large tech companies. It's the only way in some cases to succeed is to recognize they have points of strategic control and we need to get around it somehow. The carrot is the notion of vertically aligned incentives. And the example there is, again, is one that I think illustrates the point pretty well. And that is Procter & Gamble, a number of years ago, had agreed to Walmart to establish an inventory control system that gave Walmart better margins on Procter & Gamble products because they had lower cost of stocking P&G products on the shelf. And so by doing that, what Gamble was able to do is effectively increase Walmart's incentives to sell and push Procter & Gamble products. It was a joint investment in an inventory control system. That notion of joint investment is something actually that helped Oliver Williamson, an economist, won a Nobel Prize years ago. And the book goes into a number of examples of how companies can combine this notion of how do we align incentives across our buyers, our suppliers, and our customers, along with finding a stick. And we find that companies who are able to do both effectively material outperform those that don't do well on either or both of those. Long-winded way of answering your question, Eric, but hopefully it illustrates through example at least what each of those may be.
And thanks for clarifying that in great detail. Thanks so much. Now, how does this book help a manager and how does it help a business and what type of a business?
Great question. So one of the things that when I wrote this book, I wanted to do is to set out almost an instruction manual, so a step-by-step guide to what one would need to do to understand whether or not there are points of strategic control in the market, how you can access them, and what you need to do about it. And the same with vertically aligned incentives or the carrot. So both for the carrot and the stick, the first part of the book actually walks through step-by-step in a six-step fashion how you would go about assessing your own individual market for your ability to take advantage of either or both of the concepts. And the second part of the book goes into how do you extend it to multiple markets. So the idea here in many ways is not just to explain the concepts, but give the reader an ability to say, okay, from my market, what do I need to do, step one? From my market, what do I need to do, step two, et cetera? And we've applied this from anything from small businesses in Chapel Hill who were trying to understand how to deal with the Chamber of Commerce and local parking and competitors in the local market all the way up to companies like Boeing and John Deere and Fortune 100 companies. I would argue, particularly for entrepreneurs, this is crucially important because if you don't have a point of strategic control and you can't find a way to align incentives, failure rates for entrepreneurs are substantially higher than those that are able to do that. So long-winded way of saying, Eric, anything from a small business to a startup entrepreneur to a Fortune 100 company needs to take advantage of these points in order to succeed financially in the marketplace.
Now, taking that even further, and maybe a bad question, but help me here, does what you address in the book really matter? And if so, how so?
No, it's not only not a bad question, it's a great question. Actually, I have a whole chapter devoted to that where we look at things like earnings, share price for publicly traded companies, net income, return on net assets, various financial metrics for companies that range from really poor on both of these to doing really well on that. In earnings for companies that do well on both, for example, over a nine-year period, were doubled over those 9 years. Those that did poorly on both of these constructs actually had negative earnings growth over these period. And we use regression and statistical techniques to get into a little more detail on that. But we have an entire chapter devoted to why it matters, number one, and more importantly, to provide evidence that it matters and is material to firm performance. So, Eric, to take it to the local entrepreneur, if you're going to fight back against a Google or an Amazon, you have to find a way to recognize their control and how do we work around it. And a chapter on how do you work around an existing point of strategic control by a competitor.
Certainly some great information and food for thought. Today we're joined by Dr. William Putsis, President and CEO of Chestnut Hill Associates, a strategy consulting firm. He's also the founder of the software company Cadeo Economics. His new book is The Carrot and the Stick, Leveraging Strategic Control for Growth, and he's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, Continuing on, Dr. Putzis, what companies or individuals would you hold up as examples of companies or people that utilize the strategies in the book, and what are the lessons to be learned for the rest of us?
And again, another great question. So one I hold up in particular is Alphabet. There are many: Amazon, Netflix, Baidu, and Alibaba in China. It's not just a U.S. concept. But a real quick story. I was at a CEO conference in New York, and I was talking about Google, and the CEO of the second largest insurance company in Latin America came up to me after, and he said, "I hate Google." And I said, "Well, that's pretty strong. Can you tell me why?" Well, he says, I insure automobiles, and they know that driver A drives too fast. They know that driver B never stops at stop signs, and driver C travels too close to the car in front of. Driver D is a safe driver, and they want to sell me that information. So he says they're extorting money out of me. Worse yet, if I don't pay up for that information, they threaten to sell it to my rivals. And so I have to pay it or I'll be at a disadvantage in the marketplace. The reason why I tell that story is that the company that above all else has done this exceedingly well with the Android operating system, Google Maps, and others is Alphabet. And the reason why I also give that example is much like soft soap, they are not in the insurance business. Soft soap wasn't in the pump business. Alphabet is able to take advantage and gain revenue from insurance because they know location and behavior. And so the lesson for others in many ways from that example of what Alphabet does and holds up in the marketplace is that you don't always need to look in your own industry. Sometimes something, a critical input to your industry, is a way of leveraging it. And in the book, I walk through what I call a value chain. How do you start from R&D all the way to service and support? And then how do you find that somewhere in that value chain and may or may not be in your core industry? And so any of the large tech companies, I look at some service companies like Zappos, if you will, is also an Amazon company, does it quite well.
And thanks for those examples and lessons there. Much appreciated. Now, what is different about today's environment, and how does this book help companies navigate this environment?
This is a good one, too. As I start off the book talking about speed and interconnectivity, there are a number of things different about today, but I often look at speed. An example I'll hold up is that the RIM, now BlackBerry, with the BlackBerry operating system, went from 27.8% market share of the installed base for smartphones in the world to 0.8% in just about 4 years. That speed is unprecedented. And so the ability for your market as you exist to be disrupted, or for you to disrupt an existing player, think of Warby Parker, think of Uber, think of Airbnb as examples. The ability to do that quickly has never happened with the light speed of today. And then the other thing to build on that is the interconnectivity of markets, the interconnectivity, as we're seeing in many ways, unfortunately, with the spread of the coronavirus more recently. But the interconnectivity of markets, the interconnectivity of people, means we can go across one market to the other for strength. So in the second part of the book, I talk about how you can take an existing point of strategic control in one market and leverage it to another market, much like Alphabet Google did it with insurance in Latin America, much like the soft soap example, were able to leverage their ability to gain access to production for the pumps in the soft soap market.
Dr. Putzis, again, we certainly appreciate your time and joining us here today and for all the insight and information shared here today. As we conclude, getting back to the book, what does this book tell us about the movement to break up big tech and also about startups trying to compete with the Apples, Alphabets, and Amazons of the world? And does it help inform regulatory authorities? And if so, how so on that as well?
Absolutely. And it's one of the perhaps more important points that comes out of the book. If we're going to have a well-informed and educated regulatory policy, we need to understand what the true source of the strength, market share, development, and growth of companies like Amazon and Alphabet. We need to understand what is that source if we're ever going to understand how to address it in the marketplace. And so if we look at how Alphabet, then Google, had acquired Waze, had built the Android operating system. Now, Amazon has covered many of the, and acquired many of the companies in which they were competing. They've developed a series of points of strategic control that become difficult to break if you're a potential entrant. And hence, any source of future regulatory efforts to break up or not break up the large technology companies has to understand that source, or what we'll be doing will be misguided. And then to the second part of the question, Eric, I spent a fair amount of time actually developed six strategies of what companies can work through. One of those six usually works for companies that are trying to attack some of the larger rivals. Disintermediation is one of them, for example. How do we find a way to disintermediate existing products? Warby Parker, getting around the dominant market share and distribution stranglehold or strategic control point of the large eyeglass manufacturers. Looking at Dollar Shave Club or Harry's and how they were able to disintermediate Gillette and Schick's dominant market share and distribution. So on the one hand, we need to understand what is the true source of strategic control and an enduring point of dominance for the large tech companies, number one. And then number two, we need to be able to think about how we can help markets be more competitive for the entrepreneurs. And the way we do it is help them find their own points of strategic control and or find a way to disintermediate existing points of their larger rivals.
Again, thanks so much for your time. And before you go, I'm sure listeners want to know how they can get more information online on your book, The Carrot and the Stick, and how can they also get more information on Chestnut Hill Associates online?
Thank you for that plug, Eric. So the easiest place and the hardest part is spelling name. My last name is Putsis, P-U-T-S-I-S. And the best place to go for all of that is just to go to Putsis.com. So you just have to remember how to spell P-U-T-S-I-S. Putsis.com, where the book is available. There's a link there to Amazon. Or you can go on Amazon, just search my last name. One of the good things about having the last name like Putsis is if someone were to search on either Google or Amazon for Putsis, there will be one of me that turns up on it. So Amazon.com or Putsis.com, either will work to get to me, and we have links to the company, links to the book, and I'm happy to help with anyone out there that wants to read more.
And that's easy enough, and we'll leave a link within the show notes of this broadcast as well. Again, Dr. Putsis, all the best, and thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Eric, great question. Thanks so much for having me.
And you're more than welcome anytime. We've been speaking with Dr. William Putsis, President and CEO of Chestnut Hill Associates, a strategy consulting firm and founder of the software company Cadeo Economics. His new book is The Carrot and the Stick, Leveraging Strategic Control for Growth. And the website that does it all, visit Putsis.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune in to our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.